were terrified we wouldn't. So every kid on the soccer team got a trophy. Our grades were inflated. Our teachers threw out their red pens. And now we're moving all our very special selves into your office. What's a manager to do?
Must have employee recognition programs.
Eric Chester's advice, keep the praise coming. He's with Generation Y, a training and consulting company. Recently, his phone's been ringing off the hook with calls from managers asking, what is with these kids? How do I keep them here and happy? Chester says the expectations of Gen Yers for constant praise are not going to change.
That means you have to create systems that recognize and reward accomplishment. It doesn't necessarily mean outstanding behavior.
More like the accomplishment of being a good and loyal employee. Forget employee of the month, how about employee of the day? In Providence, Rhode Island, the Gilbane Building Company does it with special award ceremonies almost every morning.
I am here to present a Values in Action Award for teamwork, dedication to excellence, and loyalty to Barbara Gorman.
Last year in a survey of the company's 2,000 employees, the younger staff at Gilbane said they weren't getting enough positive feedback. So a Generation Y consultant was hired and the awards program was born. This morning, the focus is on Barbara Gorman in marketing. She's middle-aged with short white hair and is completely taken aback.
And I didn't think I did anything extraordinary at all. It's just what I would do. And I certainly did not expect that.
Barbara's been with Gilbane for 17 years and never received an award like this. She says she just did what she's always done, her job. The hoopla isn't really necessary. But her 29-year-old coworker, Jesse Polhemus, feels very different. He says he'd never stay with a company that didn't offer regular recognition to its employees.
It's something that needs to be visible. You know, it should be part of daily life. It may only be 10 minutes, but the results are a lot more than that, absolutely.
The results may be positive, but all this recognition can be a hard pill to swallow for many managers. Christine O'Halloran is an interior designer in San Diego. She says when she was in her 20s, she practically had to pay someone to let her work for them. Now, at 46, she's finally the boss, but her time is taken up patting employees' backs for meeting deadlines and giving champagne toasts at morning meetings, all to keep the 20-somethings in her office happy.
If they're not happy, it's like a cancer in the office, and it just spreads. It happens very fast. You can feel it in the attitude. It's like with kids. It's very obvious that we're taking over where their parents left off.
O'Halloran says she bends over backwards to keep everyone feeling like they're a unique snowflake. But really, she says, not every young person is special. Wait, except me, right? I'm special, right? Ah, I know just who to call. Mom?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I'm special?
I think you have pretty wonderful talents and skills that make you special.
Well, thanks, Mom.
That's it?
That's it. Almost enough encouragement to last me the whole day. For NPR News, I'm Hannah Jaffe Walt in Seattle.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Reporter and humorist Bill Geist is my guest in this portion of the program. A native of Champaign and an alumnus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, he's a correspondent for CBS News Sunday Morning. He's also a contributor to CBS News and CBS Sports. He's been on the road now for CBS for 20 years. One of the things he's learned along the way, America is full of surprises. Here's an example. The town of Wayland, Minnesota is so small, ready? It's so small that when the townsfolk organize a parade, they organize it so the parade stands still and the crowd walks around it. Bill writes about small towns in his latest book, his seventh, Way Off the Road, Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America. The publisher is Broadway. Bill, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
How's the weather out there?
Hot. And humid.
Yeah.
Hazy, hot, and humid.
Good. So we'll get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
In New York.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Wayland, Minnesota. How many people call that town home?
Well, 62, which is not the smallest town in the book by any means, but no, it was great. The people came to the standstill parade, and they were so baffled by it that they would bring their lawn chairs out and set them down, and I guess after about 20 minutes of staring at the tuba player's leg, they realized that the parade wasn't going anywhere and that they had to walk around the parade. But it was I think, in American ingenuity at its finest.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Who came up with it?
Well, a local fellow, that younger guy who moved into town, opened an ice cream store and shop, and realized that he needed people to eat the ice cream. His customers. It was kind of a bad idea to open a business in this little town because which was dwindling, and so he thought this would help. I think he was spurred on by the mother of invention. He wanted to make a little money, but alas, they didn't eat that much ice cream.
Oh, that's an American story, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So how many people were in the parade, and how big was the crowd?
Well, the crowd was not huge. People did come from surrounding towns. There's no newspaper or television station, of course, or radio station around to promote this. So the crowd was rather small, but the parade was large. They got a lot of people to come in. They got a band from a nearby town and some fire trucks and a police car and a veterans group and a red convertible with a queen and all that. I mean, it was a full-blown parade. It was pretty long, about 3 blocks. So they people just walked around it, which is great. The book salutes a lot of ingenious schemes like this. As I say, it's not the smallest by any means. But we were at a place, Moonshine, Illinois, actually.
Where is Moonshine? Never
I
heard
wish
of
I
it.
I could tell you. No one can seem to find it. It's south of I-70 in Clark County.
Ah, Clark County.
You know that?
I know Clark County.
Oh,
I spent a lot
darned.
Of time in Clark County.
Oh, really?
Yeah, covering low-level radioactive waste, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, well, so I spent a lot of time in Martinsville.
Yeah, well, Moonshine is a town of two people, Helen and Roy, and they have this kind of old general store that looks like it's probably, well, it is out of the 1800s, and she makes hamburgers in there that are supposedly better than any hamburger anywhere in the world. That's debatable, but I say in the book it's the best place to have one. It's just kind of this event every day from about 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock when she locks the door and shoos everybody out. Mm. People gather from all over the world at this point.
Yeah. Well, Moonshine has two. Now, there's another town in the book, a town in Nebraska.
One person.
One denizen.
Elsie Eiler. Lovely woman she has a little crossroads there, Manawai, Nebraska. It's 4 hours from Omaha and anywhere else on Earth. You probably won't get out that way much. But she has hamburgers and hot dogs and kind of a 7-Eleven type operation. And a lot of the farmers do come in. I mean, it again is kind of a gathering place. But she holds every office in town. She legally is the mayor, the police chief. She renews her own liquor license, which is nice. She runs the cemetery. They have a small library that she's opened. And the funny thing, one of the funny aspects of being the only person in town and the mayor is she draws up the annual budget and has to hold, which is about $500, keep a couple of streetlights going, and she has to hold a public hearing and she has to post a notice in the window of the store and hold a public hearing on the budget. So I think that must be quite something to watch her debate herself and take the final vote on her own budget.
Yeah. Years ago, I came across a little tiny grocery store in Atlantic Canada, and there was a sign in the window that said, "Tide tables and marriage licenses."
That
sums it up, doesn't it? That's what's important.
Well, I spent about 3 weeks trying to chase down a place in South Carolina that was supposedly a bait shop and beauty shop. And people swear it exists, and I can't find it. If any of your listeners know where it is, call me immediately. But that one ended in a dead end.
Mm-hmm. Well, these things can be ephemeral, too. They can be there 1 minute and gone the next.
That's true. I don't know about a beauty and beauty and bait shop. I don't know how. I hope they wash their hands between, you know, one and the other. But, there are some pretty wild things out there.
Yeah. When you're on the road, do you have a plan or you just roll?
I wish I could tell you we just roll and find things serendipitously and all that. But the fact is, in this day and age, poor Charles Gerald, who hired me, probably wouldn't be able to go out on the road and just spend all that time out on the road looking for things. We kind of have to somehow find out about these stories. I think in Moonshine, Illinois, somebody wrote me a letter who'd been there and told me about it. So we get our best ideas from viewers of the CBS Sunday Morning Show. And it's a difficult part of the job is sitting in New York and having your finger on the pulse of small towns all over America.
Mm. Well, you grew up in a small town, kind of.
Champaign?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of.
I tell a story in the book about it being kind of a provincial upbringing, and I give an example when I was back at the Champaign. It was back when Champaign had one high school, Champaign High School, and I looking through one of our Champaign High School yearbooks and discovering that our foreign exchange student was from America, which was kind of amazing. He was from Hawaii, so.
Yeah.
Thrown off a little bit there, but that's kind of how provincial things were. But I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was reading about you on the CBS homepage or the webpage, the CBS News, your bio, and one of your many honors includes capturing third place in the Illinois State Fair bake-off.
That's correct.
What did you bake?
if I can remember. apricot or apricot, depending on how you pronounce it, sour cream coffee cake. In the yeast and quick breads division.
Uh-huh.
And there were 14 of us baking on stage over in Springfield. And the finalists, they selected 14 recipes that they liked, and 14 were invited. So you're actually cooking before an audience in Springfield. I think it was just people looking for somewhere to sit down at the fair.
Yeah.
But I had a very funny ending to it. I got third place instead of second because I had... The judges said I had uneven nut distribution. So that's something I've had to live with all these years.
Maybe you'll reprise that recipe at a state fair.
I tried to go back and do it again, but I have to be a resident of the state to do it. So I'm going to I don't think the state fair is going to measure up to the Illinois State Fair, frankly.
One quick question. Is the New York State Fair, do they have a butter cow?
I hope so. They, as you know, from the book, I celebrate the artist who makes the butter cow, a life-size cow made out of butter at the Iowa State Fair. I don't know. Does Illinois have a butter cow now?
I don't know now, but I know when I was a kid, we sure did.
Oh well, great.
Yeah. So that was a while ago. The odometer has turned over, Bill. So
well, you know, you're on the radio. You don't have to divulge these things.
Yeah. Well, we've got to wrap it up here. I wish you a great summer. Happy trails.
Thank you.
Bill Geist has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Look for his book, Way Off the Road, Discovering the Peculiar Charms of Small Town America. The publisher is Broadway.
Earth and Sky.
A team of scientists is using nanotechnology to invent new ways for doctors to find even the smallest cancerous tumors and treat them before they grow.
Michael Saylor, a chemist at the University